Omaha Public Radio presents another program from FilmStreams, Omaha's nonprofit cinema. We'll hear a panel discussion which took place following a screening of the film Encounters at the End of the World, directed by Werner Herzog. The film, produced in the United States in 2007, is a documentary about Antarctica and some of the people doing research both above and below the ice in the regions around the South Pole. This event is part of an ongoing FilmStream series, Art House, Bemis Artists Talk Film. The members of the panel include moderator Hesse McGraw, Bemis Center curator, as well as four artists in residence at the Bemis: David Bowen from Duluth, Minnesota, Peter Miller from Vienna, Austria, Eileen Schmelz from Los Angeles, and Janelle Iglesias from Queens, New York. One reference to the film includes the term bucket heads, wherein people covered their heads with white plastic buckets in order to simulate zero visibility during blizzard conditions, a survival exercise to try to find their bearings as well as each other. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Friday evening, August 1st, 2008, for broadcast at this time. The opinions expressed are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of the FilmStreams Theater, the Bemis Center, KIOS-FM, or the Omaha Public School District. Here now to introduce the program is Bemis Center curator Hesse McGraw.
My name is Hesse McGraw. I'm the curator at Bemis, and I'll introduce the current residents who have joined us. This is David Bowen to my left. He's here from Duluth, Minnesota. Peter Miller, who's come from Vienna, Austria, he's alive today, sufficiently jet-lagged. Eileen Schmelz, who's from Los Angeles, and Janelle Iglesias from Brooklyn.
Queens. So this is the first time any of us have seen the film. So what I think you're getting here is very immediate reactions. And I think the first thing that I'd like to ask is, who of you would like to go to McMurdo?
I've actually looked into that National Science Foundation. They have a grant for artists to join icebreaker trips and propose specific projects to do it and things like that. But it was one of those things where I was like, I definitely need to do a lot more research before submitting any kind of proposal. I felt like watching those guys with their buckets on their heads, you know. And I thought that was a kind of beautiful metaphor for the naivete I felt about myself, even like conceptualizing this place and our place in that place. But I definitely feel like I have a certain kinship to maybe being a professional dreamer, and a lot of my work comes from that infinite creativity of the natural world, and just seeing those photographs and that footage of underneath the ice. I mean, just the idea of being able to see that firsthand is such a overwhelming idea, that possibility, but also a humbling one of, you know, raises questions of that. We can get into that later. What about you, Eileen?
I think it's actually interesting to say that Werner Herzog has actually gone to Antarctica as part of essentially what is an artist residency. Mm. These are kind of explorers in residence or scientists in residence. So there's actually an application process that one goes through to get there. But yeah, I think, as you say, it's an apt metaphor, and it's probably instructive from Herzog's point of view that he focused so long on the buckethead scene. maybe saying something very directly about these people being quite clueless about what they're actually doing down this white void of land.
I thought it was really fascinating at the end. I don't know, the guy that was working with the neutrino collector, and the idea of these particles that are everywhere, like throughout everything, but so difficult to detect, and the absurdity of this machine created to detect these things that seemed at first kind of inconsequential. It's like, so what? And then he drew it back to, like, these were potentially responsible for everything, you know? I mean, so, you know, there were these kind of ties into, like, looking for, like, this search, this idea of the search. That was really fascinating to me, that sort of research.
Yeah, I think, I mean, we were just talking about how Herzog sort of typecasts these characters. He tells you about them before you're introduced to them on screen, and in this case, it's, you know, the implication is very clear that they're going through all of this effort over something that, you know, admittedly maybe does nothing, and the speculation is that it has these vast implications in terms of the origins of the world, but that's a kind of hyperbolic speculation. So where is, you know, where is the truth? Is there any truth to be found in Antarctica? You know, I think
any scientific truth.
Yeah.
I mean, it seemed exactly. Like a very spiritual search in so many ways, and they, you know, prefaced that, and they had all the background of all of this very religious type of spiritual music, and they likened these people on some sort of spiritual quest, or these random eccentrics that were out there measuring the unmeasurable, or, you know, exploring the unexplorable. And then with this backdrop of this religious music, it just seemed like they were making these parallels of that, these vision quests. It's kind of interesting that way.
But then we're constantly reminded that these are really misfits.
Yeah.
And I think the, you know, one statement about how all things fall to the bottom, you know, the crazy people fall to the bottom of the barrel. Yeah. You know, these are like the real nut jobs. And there's a certain point where I wrote this down. You know, they're talking about, the one guy's talking about parasites in the anus of these these creatures. So are these people actually like parasites in the world's anus? You know? And they're eating it up through the bottle.
It's interesting too, because Herzog has a history of working with these eccentric exactly. type of people, and it's like these are all of the eccentrics sort of gathered together in this one mm-hmm. sort of, yeah, the anus.
At the same time I kept thinking about how it was one of these places where everybody there, it seemed to, like, that he talked to, and when you watch people talk about things that they love, you know, how their whole posture and their eyes change, and it just seems like everybody who's there really love kind of brought them there in some kind of way, you know, and talking about that place was a way to get to that same question in a way. Like, it's interesting, you go to any town and not everybody's there because they want to be there, but it was one of those crazy places where everybody's there because they want to be, and you get that aspect of people by virtue of that so easily. So,
yeah, which of course, I mean, probably many of you are fans of Herzog. Maybe a show of hands, actually. Yeah, everyone. So, you know, we all know, like, Herzog is drawn to these kind of extreme characters, particularly in his documentaries, but I think also in the, you know, fiction films. Characters sort of that are testing the limits of the natural world. He's drawn to them in a very direct way, but also actually quite repulsed by what they're doing. And the films are continually commenting on the sort of, you know, futility of their efforts. Mm-hmm. So, in fact, you know, he's documenting people that maybe want to die very spectacularly. And I think it's interesting, this film also ties this back to the penguin, you know, this deranged penguin who's walking off to his death. You know, I would like to start to draw this, connect this back to some contemporary art issues. I think Bastian Otter is a sort of very obvious mm-hmm. connection. If any of you don't know, Bastian Otter was an artist in California in the 70s, whose final piece was actually called In Search of the Miraculous. And what he did was got in a quite small dinghy, small sailboat, and sort of went off into the Atlantic. And he disappeared. He was never found again. So the work survives in this image of him kind of going out into the Atlantic, and then also in his death, in his obituary. And it's, you know, it's interesting. I think that film, or that work, came out at a time where many people were sort of searching for a new kind of identity, this period of the 70s. And Herzog seems continually sort of obsessed with this. So I wonder maybe, you know, in each of your works, what you might be searching for. If not the...
Oh, God.
They actually asked me to ask yes or no questions. So this is the big one. David, I think you're first.
Well, my work deals with relationships between natural and mechanical systems, and you could kind of look at those two as sort of having a contrast, I guess, in some ways, like formally on a superficial level. But I'm really fascinated by connections that I continue to find between these two sorts of systems, I guess, to put it in a big picture. So I don't know. I mean, I guess I don't know what. I guess I'm looking for those connections, or looking for those sort of happenstance kinds of things. I don't know a better way to explain it, but I guess if I had to talk about a search, I guess that would be it. I don't know if that makes any sense, but to look at it big picture, yeah. So,
well, I'm gonna maybe to draw back. I think what's happening with many of these sort of characters in the film is that they're kind of creating invisible solutions for imaginary problems, which is maybe what a lot of artists do, actually. You create your own problems. You're creating your own context. I think good artists are looking to create their own context while being aware of a history and sort of what's being done around them. You know, I don't think... any of you are working in a context where you might actually die.
You never know.
Eileen said you never know.
I was going to say I'm too squirmish to risk myself in my work, I think. But if I can twist your question around a little bit to make it easier to answer. I was going to say if I looked at my own, if I tried to ask myself what was Herzogian about my own work, I would probably think about what Eileen mentioned earlier about the role that truth plays in his films, especially this film. I'm having a hard time. I'm thinking of this film as a documentary, and I'm having a hard time thinking of it as a documentary, as a genre, the way that it looks for truth, or the way that it analyzes the truth that it finds, is not like the Fluffy Penguin documentaries that we're accustomed to seeing. He even goes out of his way to kind of intentionally bash the very Nanook of the North, the first documentary, Flaherty's. And he talked, and the Shackleton film comes in, and he reminds us that Shackleton was an actor in his own. Shackleton was performing his own identity. Mm-hmm. So there's this weird kind of meta, self-referential. So he shows his hand to us. We know that he's making a constructed film. He's playing this non-diegetic choir music, you know, and it's unclear to me as to whether or not like his quest for truth. It's spiritual, but then that's checked by this existential fear that aliens are going to have this anthropological mess of like frozen sturgeon under the South Pole, you know. And it's beautiful, but it also, he looks at flora and fauna and he's baffled by the seals and the humans that look at the seals. I love that. If I was going to say this as one scene, I think every, because the film is encounters at the, what's it called, at the end of the world. So it's about these encounters. And each person he sees, like the parasite and the red worm parasite, the people, while they tell us what they're doing, they're revealing to us who they are, mm-hmm. why they do it, who we are, why we do what we do. And there's the seal people. You know, he tells us he's not going to make a documentary about fluffy penguins, and then he shows us these really cute seals. But then he shows us the kind of abuse of studying seals, and we're afraid of that. Mm-hmm. And then the people that are studying the seals tell us that seals are great because you can tape them without them knowing that you're watching them. And they keep talking about this, and you're like, wait a minute, we're taping you without you knowing that we're watching you.
Or you can abuse them without them
exactly.
becoming
exactly.
too
yeah.
upset.
Yeah. Herzog is kind of, interesting. Reminds me of another species on this planet, you know?
Yeah.
And then we see them lying on the ice, listening to the seal sounds, and they're just these big, fat forms flopping around on the ice.
Yeah.
And they are so the seals that they're studying. It's like every single encounter he has eventually breaks itself down to reveal its own quest for truth. But when the movie's over, I'm sorry, I'm answering this question way too long. But the last line, we return to the pitchfork philosopher, who reminds us Alan Watts' quip about how we are the eyes and the ears of the universe, in its own glory, basking in its own glory or something, which somehow sidesteps the spiritual, and we just become the Neutronians somehow. We're just part of this fiber of looking outwards. But so I think I'm interested in the very unclear role that truth plays in the things that we know about the world around us.
Yeah, this is the great trick of any Herzog documentary, is that they're not documentaries in any way. They're complete
very
fiction.
Directed, yeah.
They're very much directed, written, narrated, and spoken in, you know, this incredible voice, which with every film seems to become more and more foreign. He's sort of receding into the interior of Germany. We don't know where this... We don't know where he's from anymore. He's coming out of a cave or something. You know, he speaks of this thing which he calls the ecstatic truth, which exists for him maybe somewhere next to a frozen sturgeon. But, you know, this ecstatic truth in his films is something that he's constructing. Mm. It's very much a constructed reality. Which, you know, I think Rachel actually just mentioned is kind of the great hypocrisy, actually, of his films, and is probably what makes them great, also. That this is the kind of delicious contradiction. Eileen, I think I'd like to maybe describe your work briefly. I mean, this is an overview, but Eileen's making these very incredible, sort of stunningly intricate drawings and paintings in her studio right now that involve these incredibly complex crystalline structures that almost look like glaciers, in a sense, or sort of digital three-dimensional maps of a glacier. And they're set against these other kind of organic flowing patterns. So I think visually, sort of formally, there's a relationship actually between what you're doing in the studio and these landscapes in the film. I don't know if that's something that struck you while you were watching this.
Yeah, definitely. I've looked at a lot of glaciers, and what they came out of was arriving here and having all of these storms happen and these huge thunderhead clouds, and reading into it about how it was actually water droplets that would get sucked up so quickly that these clouds are actually these lace, at a microscopic level, are actually these lace systems of ice. And so that's how I started to think about them, and went along with this pattern of thinking about what's behind things, or things that aren't necessarily shown to you, but in the process of natural disasters happening or natural systems happening, things getting unearthed or things getting turned over or cracked open, or as you mentioned, I'm here from LA, which they say that the four seasons in LA are quake, fire, flood, and drought. So
it was smog.
It's smog. Smog is pervasive always. But so that kind of got me set on that track of thinking about those thoughts of at any point, and that there's more and more of these really dramatic systems that are in play. And here, especially in Omaha, I mean, it's just been a really dramatic summer. So,
yeah, it's interesting to say that in the last couple months, I think we've had at least four residents who have focused on the weather in their work, and probably only one of whom came here intending to do that. Yeah. But in a sense, people arrived here and were so struck by the sort of tumult.
Right after we all got here, we were all in the basement at 3 a.m. with the tornadoes, scared out of our wits. So I think, and that happened a couple of other times, like I think within the first week we were all here, so it definitely affected.
But I think the second time it happened, everyone was outside?
We were on the roof, yeah, watching it roll in, taking photos.
You know, it's been interesting to watch, actually, to see people come into Omaha and be struck by this very intense weather, and in a sense actually fall in love with the world in a very specific way, which is actually what Herzog's films do to you. They sort of teach you to fall in love with some place in the world, and they, you know, quote, document people who have fallen sort of tragically in love with specific places in the world. But then ultimately the films always seem to say, you shouldn't be so stupid, and there are places that you don't need to go. You know, you don't need to go hang out with the grizzly bears. You don't really need to go to Antarctica.
But I think they also strip it down to a very human element, like throughout all of them. I mean, there is that you don't really need to go there, but then there's this feeling of like, what is it in us that we want to go there and we want to hear about it and we want to learn about it and we want there to be disaster and we want, I mean, it's like this inner drama, this humanness of it all, like the sand and the oyster, you know, we love that. We have to have that just as humans, which I think is, you know, infinitely interesting. I think a lot of our work deals with that too. I mean, as artists, it seems like it's all about that little sand in the oyster part of things, that anomaly, which I think he does really well.
There was a news story a couple weeks ago that actually a plane flew over in a completely undiscovered sort of community or tribe somewhere between Peru and Ecuador or something, but actually this plane has flown over this community, and the pictures that came out and were on CNN and so forth were of this tribe kind of shooting arrows at the plane. And it's interesting, when I saw that, I was thinking like, okay, how long before Herzog follows someone there? So the first person to go there and mess with these people, Herzog's going to sort of be right on their heels. I think we have a question.
I actually, when I went to undergrad at KU, one of my professors, he's an astrophysics professor down there, and he works on the neutrino telescope down there. And it was really interesting because he had something, kind of some insight about neutrinos and how there's something so intangible and like kind of unapparent to everybody, and yet they give us so much insight to the beginnings of the world. They pretty much map to the nanosecond like the beginnings of the Big Bang and the propagation of the neutrinos from the epicenter of the Big Bang. And it's just, it kind of reminded me of the entire film. Like, they go to this really remote region where nothing is really apparent, or it's not really apparent the reason to be there, and yet there's so much discovery that's going on there. Just kind of, I don't know, gave me a little couple thoughts that were running along. Yeah, so.
Yeah, I think, you know, the world always becomes larger once you start looking at it. But I think maybe Herzog's, you know, the argument, if there is one, is that we should allow there to be white space in the world. We should allow some mystery to exist, that we don't, you know, we don't need to know everything. And it's maybe a more delightful place when, you know, when this mystery is still out there. Yeah.
Oh no, I was just saying, and then there's the contradiction of him being the second person to go film, you know,
the
place to prove that point.
Exactly.
Yeah, I kind of think, too, the fact that everything's so meta in the Herzog films, you know, everything you can kind of relate back to the actual film, the actual process of making the film. I think it's because he's celebrating the fact that we're aware of our existence and we're able to look at the world, and he's so excited about that. And I think this film really, really shows that. It's kind of amazing.
The thing that I was drawn to that kind of relates back to your tornado experience, first in the cellar and then on the roof, was he explained the dangers of these exhibitions, and yet they're down there searching without tethers and, you know, could die at any moment. I just found that incredible that somebody would be willing to go that far for exploring.
Yeah, no, it's a wonderful space analogy, but then we're reminded that they don't have tethers. Their compasses wouldn't work anyway because they're at South Pole, And then not only are they in space, but they're in a space where there's a concrete roof over them. Like, there's your claustrophobic agoraphobia right there. And then to top it all off, there are sea spiders, right? Like, flopping around all around them. I mean, am I the only one here who was totally terrified by this idea that you would just drop down this hole?
And it's -2 Celsius.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's below freezing. You're in liquid freezing water.
Yeah, that's no idea.
Staggering.
But I suppose at a certain point you can't turn back, right? You're sitting there, and there's the hole, and there's the camera.
I think that the thing that I love most about Herzog films is that it really captures something that I feel is lacking in regular documentaries. And that is that I think that whenever you try to just capture the raw reality of a thing, right? Like, if this documentary had just been footage of these people and this stuff without the kind of scripted, almost fictional nature that comes with a Herzog documentary, like, you would miss out on some amount of the truth. Like, truth can't come to be without some synthesis of, like, reality and fiction. And I think that that's, like, a big theme for Herzog, and it's one of the things that I admire most about him. Like, he sets out to capture the truth in a kind of roundabout sort of way that doesn't always seem natural, I think, to most people. Most people would say that introducing this kind of subjective commentary where, you know, he talks over people and summarizes their life stories for them and that sort of thing, like, he's somehow providing a more authentic experience by integrating himself into it than if he were to try to remove that completely.
Well, I think he's telling us what we would also like to think about these subjects. Mm-hmm. You know, he's sort of saying it in advance of the fact.
Yeah, I was going to say just quickly, I was talking about an experimental documentary earlier, but there's a genre of literature called experiential nonfiction. I think David Foster Wallace is a writer known for that, where the form of journalism is one where he'll describe, you know, his digestive system, or, you know, if he's interviewing somebody and she's attractive and he gets turned on by her, he tells you that. And it's kind of weird, but then you're also sort of like, well, it's really actually very human. So somehow condemning ATM machines or yoga studios, and you know, it's part of it. Like, he does have to include that. I don't know if anybody knows anything more about that literary genre, but I feel like his work seems closer to that than almost anything else, that experiential nonfiction sort of.
The thing that interested me in the movie a lot was the science. I thought the scientists were very interesting, and like, they're so mystical with their explanation so far. Like, when he was talking to them, there's so little like concrete science. They were saying things you kind of never would expect scientists to say, and I was kind of torn by that by the movie. But he kind of so that kind of goes to, and like, that's why they're down there, is for science. That's like our only reason to be in Antarctica is science, and it's like, it's an extreme to go to it, and kind of with the way he would condemn things down there, he would, you know, talking about our eventual demise and things, and our technology has kind of led us to, you know, kind of have hopes to go on forever, and he's talking about our eventual demise and just the kind of the way he's against the, and kind of like, he tied in global warming with it, and like, kind of the way in which it is kind of becoming our demise, and it's kind of interesting, his fight against it. Feels like there's kind of a lot of movements now to go back to, like, you know, like tribal, like, you know, like tone down the consumerism and the technology. So I kind of felt it's kind of commenting on a lot more of, like, you know, like society, where we're going with our science and what it can do for us. And he's kind of like condemning, you know, how far it's taken us. I kind of got that feeling from it.
Seems to me, though, he's also presenting it as just part of a process. You know, I mean, it was pretty light. The film is pretty lighthearted in a lot of its ways. You know, there's a lot of really laugh out loud sort of things. And then the last couple minutes is just when he really starts to lay in on the, like, you know, we're doomed and we're going to die type of thing. But, like, even then it's kind of like, oh, well, you know, this has been pretty lighthearted, enjoyable film so far. I can't be too serious. And, And the way that he talks about it is, to me, I interpreted it like, oh, well, there's, you know, all of these particles and all of these, you know, life underneath the ocean and all of these process of all these living organisms, and we were just, he's just kind of showing us a glimpse into a small fraction of the human condition, and that it was going to end, and, you know, it was going to keep going. Like, the world is going to keep going, and we're just part of the process. I don't know if anyone else interpreted that way, but that's kind of how it seemed to me.
You know, I think if you look at this film in the context of the rest of the films, and, you know, documentary and fiction, the consistency of the subject is that he's looking at extreme characters on a kind of near hopeless quest for something or other, whether that's, you know, conquering the Amazon or hauling a ship over a mountain or, you know, overthrowing a midget asylum, whatever it may be. It's this hopeless quest. So when you tie that back into the scientists in Antarctica, it's obviously a very critical view, but he's also on a parallel quest, you know, to quote, document these people. You know, I think Herzog himself, very much what he's doing is looking through his work to sort of live spectacularly and eventually die spectacularly. You know, Herzog will... He's going to die during the making of one of his films.
God, I hope so. I hope he doesn't die in his sleep somewhere.
He won't. He will die during the film. It's a bad prediction, but for him, I think he's
he'd looking be okay
for
with it.
Actually, he'd be all right.
You guys talk about these people going down there and this pointless search of this truth that they're finding. These people have lost all enthusiasm for their search. All of them are desperately just I guess like a loneliness pervert, but that's understandable. But when he showed the two scientists who discovered two new cells and their lack of any... is this a big deal? Oh, yeah, no, this is... this is a big deal. I mean, there's just absolutely no enthusiasm by any of them. None of them were excited. And I think that's almost beautiful that they're still there. And they don't want to talk to people anymore. They just want to hang out with their animals. And there's a beauty in that lack of enthusiasm for anything, absolutely anything. That
just kind of ho-hum. Yeah, we discovered two new organisms today.
Yeah, I was going to say he uses pensive and taciturn to describe the people he's looking at. Mm-hmm. It is worth noting that I think that, if I remember correctly, that last thing he says about the imminent demise of humanity, I think he's polling scientists on the South Pole. I mean, I think he said it's more and more scientists down here agree that eventually humans will just all go away. But, you know, we're a lot more chipper up here, I think. the outlook is a little better where I'm from. But yeah, there's something about the total collapse of affect down there. Like the society, there seems to be no mask of society. They're just going around doing their business, with the exception of the woman getting into her own bag. And that seemed like a regular night out, you know, somewhere. But other than that, they all were totally affect.
The rest of them seem like medicated schizophrenics.
Yeah.
I think we have a question up at the top.
I'm going to respectfully disagree with a few of the comments. I don't think, personally, my interpretation, I don't think that Herzog is necessarily just criticizing or point-blank condemning the characters that he chronicles in either his fiction or his documentary films. I think he often is very honest about the destruction that their quests can wreak on the environment or on people around them, often shows how it's really pushing the brink of insanity. But I think he's fascinated by them as well, and not solely because he considers them insane or bizarre, but because he sees maybe the essence of what he considers the human impulse to seek out the most extreme borders of our sanity of our physical borders. And I think he recognizes it because he shares it. You sort of started to say that, but all his movies are in some way living out that same quest to be the most bizarre and the most envelope pushing of the experience itself, not just portraying it, but an actually experience making the film itself. If you see where he's filmed around the world and where he set his films, they're about in the most bizarre and far-flung regions of the earth. And in Fitzcarraldo, for example, some of you might know this, but when he chronicles a fiction film, but he chronicles a man trying to drag a steamboat across from one side of the Amazon to the other, he himself, in the making of that film, had his crew try to do exactly that, a completely, at face value, pointless quest and absurd and ridiculous. But he evidently finds some value in this, the pushing the edge, the pushing the brink, and I think he's fascinated by that impulse when he finds it in people, not just because he wants to get him as destructive, because he sees something really essential and very human about it.
I think we're in complete agreement, actually. You know, all of his films are about this dual, a duality of a relationship with the subject. So, repulsion and desire are both, they're always running parallel to one another in his work. And I think, you know, the title of My Best Fiend is a perfect, perfectly encapsulates that. Which, if you haven't seen that film, is about his sort of personal relationship with Klaus Kinski, who starred in five of the films. And, you know, they were actually kind of best friends, but also mortal enemies. Both had threatened to kill one another. Klaus Kinski's autobiography, you know, refers to Herzog as this horrible scoundrel and goes on and on about how he's the devil. But then eventually, Herzog revealed that he had written the worst passages about himself.
I just wanted to disagree on one of the comments about how they lost enthusiasm while they're down there, the scientists, that it was lacking. I think that when they discovered those new species, that it's just so, I mean, what if you discovered two new species that have never been discovered? You probably would be a loss of words. And not until it soaked in did they go on the roof and start jamming out on their guitars. You know, I'm a geology student here at the university, and our professors are pretty quirky like the guys in this movie. And when we go on field trips, sometimes they mumble to themselves because they're soaking in so much information, and you don't know what's going through their mind. Their minds are working so fast, and not until the end of the day do they get so excited they actually start running towards the outcrop they just discovered that they didn't think could exist. And you just realize that all the pieces just fell together. And I think that in this film, that a lot of the scientists, that's what was happening to them. You just couldn't see the process in their mind. I mean, just looking at the guy who was going to go in the ocean for the last time, he was so solemn before he went down. I think that just means they knew exactly why they were there, and the passion was still there, and they probably don't even want to leave.
That's great. Thank you.
I am not a documentary fan, okay? But when I found out that he had this documentary, I wanted to come see it. And I guess I'm kind of missing some of the point, because I don't really see the fiction in this documentary. I just see truth in just about everything, and a lot of passion, you know, through his eyes for living large, and he wants to show what he wants to show. I mean, I think some of his decisions and comments were meant for living large and bringing his vision to the audience.
I think this film, if you're talking about documentary, to me, it reminds me of, your comments remind me of reality TV being not necessarily reality. In many ways, I have a friend who is an editor for reality TV, and
He was talking about how much of the story, as the viewer understands it, is really the role of the editor, and it's changed, you know, from the director, who would, you know, traditionally direct the film and decide how the storyline goes along, to now where the reality television, it's that happens in the editing room, how they cut and paste and how they, you know, put one comment next to another, another drama next to one. And I think what we were talking about with this not being necessarily a true documentary is that, as you were saying, he is filming and showing what he wants us to see. And he's, you know, parts of what people are saying, or like how he's talking over other people's, when they're telling their story, he's talking over them. I mean, he could be completely fabricating. We really don't know that. You know, we trust that it's truth. But really, in that way, it's not necessarily a true documentary of just, you know, having the camera on and just documenting what's happening. I think
this film seemed less didactic than several of the most recent, where his sort of, you know, philosophical pronouncements were very hard-edged. That, you know, I think he actually seemed less forthright here, which is sort of saying a lot. But yeah, I think Eiley's right that
he's very opinionated. I mean, yeah. We definitely know his opinion and where he's coming from in this film. Yeah. You know?
Yeah, there's choices being made, of course, in the editing, but also in the way that he talks to people. And, I mean, definitely his sensibility is coming across. And, yeah, I think it's true. I wouldn't consider it straight documentary.
Yeah, asking a penguin scientist if a penguin ever goes insane is
they're gay.
Not a neutral question.
It's very directed. Yeah,
but the answers to those questions regarding penguin sexuality or penguin neuroses, very Freudian in nature, the answers are so colorful that we wish Herzog were a zoologist. You know, I mean, when he finally gets the answers out of them, we think, and then we see the penguin run off into the mountain, and we realize that sure it's crazy, sure it's got psychic traumas, it's working out or whatever.
He's psychic.
Yeah. I also
between his accent and then some of those quirky questions and talking over people, I found him very funny and maybe a little condescending, but very funny. And I don't know if that was intended or just nature.
I think he might be the funniest man alive.
He's very sarcastic, for sure.
I'm serious about that. I think he's...
I just want to say that the conversation you were having is like one of the biggest debates in documentary film criticism, because, you know, the classic version of cinema verite, where you pretend to be a fly on the wall, a lot of people argue that as soon as the camera's in the room, it changes the dynamic of the room. So by acknowledging it, and by Herzog being there talking and acknowledging his presence and acknowledging that this is coming from his perspective and I'm telling this story, it's really his autobiographical journey. A lot of people think that that's closer to real than, you know, fly on the wall.
I think that's a major conversation within anthropology as well. It's about participant observation and what kind of conclusions you're drawing, and being really forthright about where those are coming from versus, you know, presenting this sort of theory as a layer of truth on top or whatnot. Yeah, same kind of conversation.
I think it's true in a lot of fields, like even scientific fields, thinking about like Heisenberg uncertainty and the idea that a particle is affected by the tool that you use to measure it, right? So, you know, a camera in the room is going to affect, you know, what's happening for sure.
And the question of, is it possible to have true documentary? I mean, like complete,
but I, you know, I think
untouched.
I think what Rachel's saying is that by Herzog making his process very apparent in the actual film, this idea of the meta documentary is, in a way, more real than a documentary where the camera is attempting to conceal its presence.
Right.
Drawing on a couple things you said, somebody mentioned duality in it, in the film, and David, you said something where you were talking about your art, about kind of nature versus technology. And I was struck in there by, you know, I always thought of Antarctica as a beautiful place and, you know, sweeping vistas. And instead, most of the movie we were watching bulldozers and, you know, mud and just it completely turned upside down my conceptions. You know, there was some beauty in it, but there was not, you know, like under the ice. But I just wondered if you'd comment on that, the juxtaposition of those ideas. You know, we think we're going to a beautiful land. When I see a movie about Antarctica, I think, oh, this will be beautiful, and it.
Yeah, we want to see a couple of guys in tents.
Yeah, and the buildings, and I mean everything was. I've seen other movies about that place that didn't look like that, and I don't know what do you want to posture on why they why he presented it that way.
Well, it gets back to Herzog, you know, in some way being honest about the process that he's going through to make the documentary, and he's arriving in, you know, this nasty place that's not desirable, and so he's saying, well, I want to get out of here and get, you know, get to the real Antarctica, or at least the Antarctica that we see in the pictures, you know, which is also the Antarctica that we see in the Penguin movie. What is
he's
it
a master of being ironic for sure.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's a total irony.
One thing that hit me was some of the contrasts. You had some of the workers there were speaking about escaping the rest of the world, and even though the surroundings were not aesthetically pleasing, what you were seeing was the culmination of the advancements of civilization to get the base there in the first place, because all the machinery they were using, all the things they required, like oxygen to go underwater and all this, are all the result of the civilization there. Some of them seem to be condemning, and yet it was providing them the opportunity to escape to Antarctica in the first place. And the other thing I thought was funny as a joke in the movie was when he talks about technology being the doom of the human race, and then he has this hypothetical notion of an alien race coming and figuring out, well, what were we like? Well, for an alien race to get here, they would have to be more technologically superior and survived and done all the risk-taking in a dangerous environment to get to Earth in the first place to even make that sort of observation. So the fact that he threw that into the film was hysterical. So
nice paradox, huh?
I have a question with sort of a dubious twist to it, so I'll give you a little warning about that. But it seems with a lot of the Herzog films, whether it's fiction or nonfiction, you know, it's about people that are out of their element. And certainly him, when he's making these movies, I mean, he thrives on being out of his element. I think he's now made movies on every continent. And with this film, he's found a place where everyone, by definition, is out of their element. So they're drawn to it in sort of this mysterious way, but, and the volcanologists are probably the best example, they couldn't be doing what they're doing anywhere else. And so there's a purpose to it, but there's this sort of mysterious reason for arriving there. And not to compare Omaha and Antarctica, but all of you are to a certain extent out of your element. And I'm interested in how that affects your art, whether you prefer to work at wherever you consider home. And you talked a little bit already about the weather, and that was pretty interesting. But I'm interested to hear the rest of you talk about how it feels to be out of your element.
I'll start.
When you guys first started talking about that artist's residency in Antarctica, I was wondering, how hard would it be to get materials down there? that would be kind of nuts. But anyway, yeah, I obviously we do residencies for a reason. It does kind of force us into this. For me, it's uncomfortable, and I think I don't know that I necessarily do my best work at residencies, but I think my best ideas come out of it in the end. So yeah, I don't know if that answers anything, but that's how I feel.
Casey, I think it's a great question. And, you know, we've actually been talking about this somewhat recently. You know, I feel sort of very strongly, I think philosophically, that there is a real creative value to becoming a stranger somewhere, to, you know, entering a space where you're foreign, and then figuring out what that means for your normal creative process. So I think that's the same for an artist as it is for a writer.
You're, in a way, reinventing yourself for a small period of time. I mean, you show up and you don't know anyone, and you have this certain concept in your brain of how you make work and what you make work about and what your materials are. But then when you are just kind of, I felt like I was kind of dropped out of the sky here into Omaha, and you do really have to just completely redefine, okay, now what do I make work about? And maybe it's not the same as what it was when I was back home. So what's the tying element? Is there something that's the same, or am I completely interested in something different because of this environment? I mean, in some ways, BMS has been really a little incubator. I mean, we do have our own little insular community where we all, you know, talk amongst ourselves, and we do visit each other's studio quite often. But there has been a lot of community outreach this summer, and people coming into the BMS, us going out into, you know, situations such as this, which I feel is invaluable. I mean, we don't necessarily get this kind of treatment at home. I don't know about you guys, but I definitely...
They're
like little rock stars.
Don't give it all away.
Don't give it all away. Leave some mystery.
Yeah. I think it's anytime you're traveling, right? It's like if you know you're only going to be in a space for a certain amount of time, and that finite sense of being somewhere, you're much more, at least I am, much more likely to, instead of like go back, okay, that looks interesting, or have a curiosity about something, I'm not going to wait till next week. I'm going to like go and check it out. There's a certain openness to being somewhere that you can, you don't have the same habits, or you don't, you go outside of yourself more, and also you have this ability with bigger chunks of time to totally create new creative habits, or to sort of to reinvent yourself, which I think is really fun. And really,
this is something I'm extremely impressed with, I think, with all of the residents that come through BMS, is how immediately they kind of discover the city and locate new places that, you know, maybe the staff has never heard of. Finding thrift stores, new bars, you know, they don't work all day long.
Taking the bus.
That in fact they become kind of these explorers of the city. And, you know, I think something that we're actually interested in is using that accumulated knowledge to begin to produce a kind of new cultural or social map of the city that's kind of actually documented by these residents moving out throughout the city. So, you know, it's exactly what this conversation is about also, is, you know, having a dialogue following a film that they've seen for the first time and getting a very immediate response, which I think in a similar way to, you know, what I think has been a pretty productive conversation, their residencies are extremely prolific, and it's quite amazing how much work they actually can produce in 3 months after just sort of landing on their ass in Omaha, Nebraska. Thanks a lot. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
Thanks to Rachel.
Thank you, guys.
You've been listening to a panel discussion which followed a screening of the 2007 documentary film Encounters at the End of the World, directed by Werner Herzog. The discussion took place at Filmstreams, Omaha's nonprofit cinema. This event was part of an ongoing Filmstream series, Art House, BMS Artists Talk Film. The members of the panel included moderator Hesse McGraw, BMS Center curator, as well as four artists in residence at the BMS: David Bowen from Duluth, Minnesota, Peter Miller from Vienna, Austria, Eile Schmeltz from Los Angeles, and Janelle Iglesias from Queens, New York. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Friday evening, August 1st, 2008, for broadcast at this time. Special thanks to Rachel Jacobson, Casey Logan, and Jim Foyt of FilmStreams for helping to make the recording and broadcast of this program possible. Now, this is your producer and host, Bob Cote, thanking you for listening.